And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ and Bucky here. Buck, the pads have been put on, and that means we are officially in football season. How you doing, man?
Man, I am great because we are officially in football season. Beginning to see the highlights, and it looks like practice. We're seeing guys go through what we normally see in training camp. And so, at least at the NFL level, it appears that football is going to go on, and I'm really, really excited about it.
Yeah, you know, talking to people around the league and personnel executive, general managers, people in the personnel departments, they're very, very, very optimistic that we're going to get this thing rolling. We're doing great. The testing's been going well. Now we get to see, okay, now there's some more interaction. You start getting in some team periods, and now you see some close interaction. So from a virus standpoint, I think we'll learn more over the next week or so about how we proceed through this process. But man, it's been fun to see, like you said, the highlights of some of these players out on the practice field. And man, you don't realize how much you've missed it. Well, for me personally, when the Padres lose five games in a row, and then finally to see some football, it was a welcome respite.
Yeah, no, it's been great to watch. It's been great to watch them go through the protocols. There was a lot of intrigue about how guys were going to, how coaches and teams were going to handle all of the protocols that you have to go through with COVID. But then you wanted to know how much was it going to impact the on-field product. And look, the testing has been great. The things that we've been able to see, and I felt like Hard Knocks did a great job of taking us behind the scenes to see how teams are handling the pandemic and the testing and the things that you have to do to keep everyone in the building safe. But then also beginning to see the practices and how things are being done. And surprisingly, a lot of it looks like it has always looked once you get on the field. Coaches are standing farther away from their players. But in terms of the on-the-field product, it looks like football. And I worried about that part of practice.
Yeah, the cool thing is, think about what we used to do as scouts. You'd be out on the field watching all these practices. You'd have your position you're responsible for to evaluate. At the end of your 10 days or however long you stayed at camp, you get together as a personnel department and you really dig in and evaluate your own roster with each scout, given a detailed ranking and reports on their position that they watched. They're doing the same thing. They're watching the practices right now at home, because now through the iPads and everything, as soon as the practice ends, boom, you can upload the practice. So the scouts are still responsible for their positions and evaluating those. They're just doing it from home.
I will give a lot of NFL teams and executives credit for being nimble. There's a lot of concern about how evaluators would handle the new world as we know it, in terms of virtual workspaces, not being able to go and kind of get in-person looks on people. And we've been able to kind of find ways to work around it. And I think, you know, the meetings, it's interesting watching coaches have team meetings in training camp that are still virtual. The Carolina Panthers, for instance, are using the entire stadium, and they're basically are putting each of their players in suites. And so when they have their team meetings, the players go to their designated suites and they log in, and that's how they interact, because that's the best way to kind of keep them apart. And so a lot of credit. There's a lot of planning and a lot of logistical things that they've had to work out. But training camp is different, but it appears that we're going to be able to get the same work out of it that we've always been able to get.
Yeah, it gets us excited for the start of the season. I've gone on record and said I think that week one is going to be the most anticipated and exciting week of football for multiple reasons. We've been without it, you know, obviously not having preseason games lends into a little bit of that intrigue. Think about this, Buck. When you were with teams, how many times when you go through the first week or 2 weeks of practice and you're like, man, we're good, man. Like, we have a really good team. And then there's other years where you're like, man, I don't think we're any good. And you know what? You go play a couple preseason games. You do some joint practices with other teams. You see them. You see us. You go, okay, maybe we're better than I thought. Or maybe, man, we're not quite as good. You're going to go into week one. You don't know anything. You don't know anything. You don't know how you stack up because you haven't gone against anybody.
Yeah, this has a very collegiate feel to it, you know, because in college you don't get a chance to see what teams are going to be in. A lot of the polls, the preseason rankings, are just guesses and estimates on what we think teams are going to be like. And it's not until 2 or 3 weeks in they were like, yeah, that team is not exactly what we thought they were going to be. The National Football League is going to be like that. I do wonder, though, because of this, you know, we've always said that Matt Rhule and Cliff Kingsbury and some of the guys that have spent their time in college are at a disadvantage. But this year they may be at more of an advantage in terms of getting their teams ready, because they've always operated without the preseason games and those things as evaluation tools. They just get their teams ready to play for week one. And this is what the National Football League will look like. Hey, we just got to gear up and get ready for week one. We may have some inter-squad scrimmages and some live team periods, but it's all about getting ready for the first opponent.
Yeah, I don't remember who they practiced against, but I do remember the Eagles, their Super Bowl year. I want to say it was the Dolphins, but they did some joint practices with the team that had, I believe, had made the postseason the year before. It was a pretty good team. And talking to the Eagles during that time, they're like, man, I think we might have something here, because we just saw a playoff team for a couple days and we beat the brakes off them. I think back to Jacksonville. Remember Jacksonville when they were doing those practices with the Patriots? And they walked out of there saying, like, well, this is the big bad bully on the block. We just beat the tar out of them in practice. So it gave them confidence. We don't have that this year, man. It's totally different.
Yeah, it is totally different. And that's why you've talked about it on the podcast before. The first 4 weeks of the season are literally going to be like the preseason. And we talk to enough executives and coaches that they talk about your team is ever evolving. You don't really find out the identity of your team until about the midway point. There are things that you enter the season thinking, hey, we're going to be able to run the ball. We're going to be able to do these kinds of things on defense. But until your guys actually play in live game action, you really don't know how your team is going to be identified and what's going to kind of be the basis and the hallmarks of your team. This year, more than ever, teams have to be able to kind of shift on the fly based on how their team plays very early in the season. It will be interesting to see which teams are able to kind of quickly make that turn and make the turn at the right moment, as opposed to, hey, we changed too soon or we changed too late.
All right, we're going to get into some fun topics today, Buck. We're going to talk about what's going on with some of these new extensions. We've seen a bunch of new extensions. Washington has a new president of their football team, somebody that I was around with, the Cleveland Browns, who's we can talk about in a little bit, which I think was an outstanding hire for them. Micah Parsons, some talk about him, the Penn State linebacker who's declared. We'll touch on that one briefly. We do want to honor a friend of the show and Howard Mudd, who's an all-time great offensive line coach who unfortunately passed away this last week. So we're going to play a little snippet of our conversation with him this last year and talk about that a little bit. But before we get to those things, Buck, I want to talk about some of these rookies that are popping. And guys that you're starting to hear some buzz about, talking to friends around the league. It's going to be hard to get information this year because we don't see the preseason games, as we've been talking about. But there are some guys that are buzzing. Well, Buck, before we get to these rookies that are popping, I wanted to ask you this question. As an advanced scout, as somebody in the pro scouting department that's trying to get ready for those week one games, you got to imagine they're just on Twitter 24/7. Like, you know, the Chargers open against the Bengals. So if you're doing the advance report for that game and you work for the Chargers, I imagine you're following every Cincinnati Bengals media member and trying to find any morsel of video to say, oh, this guy lined up here. Oh, it looks like he's playing there. And looks like they're running a little bit of outside zone, or just trying to get anything you can out of these little tiny clips you're going to see on Twitter.
Yeah, I think this year, very early in the year, especially if you're playing against a team with a new coaching staff, you have to go back and look at what they did at previous stops. Or, for instance, if you're taking on the New York Giants, not only Joe Judge, but you got to deal with Jason Garrett. Well, Jason Garrett hasn't been an offensive coordinator in, 10, 12 years? So you got to go all the way back and look at what he did previously when he was the play caller. So much guesswork or whatever. I think your game plans will have to be very, very generic, at least for the first week. And you have to adapt in the middle of the game. And that may be difficult. But yes, your advanced scout, they have to scour the internet. They have to look for anything from beat writers, from reporters around the team, any content that the social media team puts out from that team. You got to dig into it. It is really going to be a scavenger hunt trying to find information for your team.
Hey, no doubt. All right, I want to get some rookies to you here that I've heard some buzz about. And, you know, if guys just keep an eye on, as I guess if you're a fan of fantasy football, maybe they can help you out with some of that as well. A couple names on the offensive side of the ball, wide receivers. Bryan Edwards. We talk so much about Henry Ruggs going to the Raiders, but Bryan Edwards, unfortunately, was a little nicked, so he wasn't able to run at the combine. That was a little bit of the concern, was kind of his top speed. But somebody's very productive at South Carolina, very physical, and I think he's got a very good shot of beating out Tyrell Williams to start for the Raiders.
Hey, I liked him a lot. I like him a lot, like, having gone back, because the buzz has been building about him. And, you know, Derek Carr talked about him, and he talked about him in glowing terms, kind of compared him to Davante Adams, which is kind of shocking. He was talking about, he kind of reminds me of some of the stuff that we used to do at Fresno State when Davante was there. And Brian Adams, being a terrific route runner, a physical playmaker, does a great job of winning the 50-50 balls. And DJ, when you watched him at South Carolina, you would see him come down to with these remarkable catches where he out jumps, out muscles, overpowers the defender. He gives the Raiders someone that can do the dirty work over the middle of the field. And with Henry Ruggs able to take the top off the defense, and Hunter Renfrow able to do some of the little things inside as a slot receiver, there's an opportunity for him to really carve out a nice role for himself.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they juggle all these different pieces, because I think Hunter Renfrow, you want to make sure you keep him in the lineup. But you also have somebody in Ruggs who really fits best in the slot. So I'm anxious to see how that all works together with them. And Brian Edwards has been outstanding. Here's a name for you. Gabe Davis, wide receiver from Central Florida with the Buffalo Bills, who gives them some size. Remember after the Stephon Diggs trade, we talked about, man, I like what this receiving group they have with John Brown and Stephon Diggs and Beasley, but they don't have any size. They need to get some size. Well, they went in the draft and got some size. And so far, it sounds like Gabe Davis has been as advertised.
Yeah, it sounds like that. And here's the thing we talked about in Buffalo, making sure you surround your quarterback, Josh Allen, with a basketball team with a bunch of wide receivers that have different skills that will really complement what he does as a passer. And because he's not the most accurate guy, you had to have at least one big body guy that can expand the strike zone for him. They have speed merchants, John Brown, Stephon Diggs can get down the field. Cole Beasley does a great job of working the underneath areas as a slot receiver, but they needed that big body presence. And that's what Gabe Davis will give them, someone that can really expand the strike zone for Josh Allen, as he can be a little wayward sometimes with his throws.
Well, we talk about these rookie receivers. There's two. Keep an eye on with the Denver Broncos. Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler both have created some excitement here. And this is going to be a team. An offensive line is not great, but you've got a couple backs there with Melvin Gordon coming in there to join Philip Lindsay. I'm anxious to see what this skill position group looks like. We talked about them being, I think, if not the fastest, one of the two or three fastest 11 personnel teams in the league, with Noah Fant at tight end who can scoot as well. I'm anxious to see how quickly these rookies can get up to speed. So far, everything I'm hearing has been very positive.
Yeah, I'm sure those guys are going to jump right in and make it happen. And I think we can't underestimate the impact that Pat Shurmur will have on this offense. You can say what you want to say about him as a head coach. There's nothing that you can dispute about his ability to call a great offense. What he was able to do with Case Keenum in Minnesota, how he blended in Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. Well, I think he has similar guys, with the exception of he has another big body guy, Courtland Sutton. So now, Courtland Sutton, you have Jerry Jeudy, who's a route runner, you have speed in K.J. Hamler, and you have Noah Fant, who can control the middle of the field with play action and some of the exotic designs, the misdirection pass game that Shurmur likes to use. You will see more explosive plays from this Broncos offense.
Shameless plug, by the way, you mentioned Courtland Sutton. I just did a recent video on the new YouTube page, and I did one on, in my opinion, the top eight wide receivers in the NFL. And Courtland Sutton, I'm not going to say if he made the list or he didn't make the list, but that was one that I struggled with, because I'm so excited about him and where he's going. I don't know if he's quite ready to be in that top eight list yet, but he's in the discussion, and he probably will be once this year's over.
He's done a great job, because looking at him at SMU, I had my doubts and my concerns about if he would be a guy that would physically be able to handle the responsibilities of being a number one receiver. And he's really responded in outstanding fashion. Now you give him a couple of playmakers around him that can take some of the pressure off of him, which may create more one-on-one matchups. He had over 1,000 yards last year. I mean, you can see his numbers go up, even though they have more talent in the passing game. He's a fantastic player. And since you're talking about pass catchers and guys to watch, and you're in Denver, I'm going to talk about Laviska Shenault from the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay. Yeah.
Keenan McCardle talked about him the other day, and he made a comparison, not as a player, but as a physical specimen. He compared him to Andre Johnson, and he talked about just the physicality. He said he's not Andre Johnson, but his physicality, his ability to muscle and outmaneuver and overpower defenders on the edge, plus being a terrific guy with the ball in his hands, gives them a different dynamic, a different dimension. And it's last year during the draft process, people kind of cooled on him because he's not a polished route runner. He's more playmaker than route runner. But in the right offense where they just kind of feed him the ball and let him go to work, he could be a very impactful playmaker as a first-year player.
Yeah, he's somebody I think has got a chance to have a big year. And Gardner Minshew, just get the ball in his hands and let him go. Flip it to him, give him a reverse. You can line him up in Wildcat, let him do that stuff. He did all that in college. So that's an interesting one to keep an eye on. Running back position, no surprise. Clyde Edwards-Helaire walked into the starting job. I mean, he's starting from day one. And they have so much speed. It's just, he's going to catch a zillion balls because there's just so much speed. It's going to push everybody out. And you're going to have easy completions for Mahomes, and he's not afraid to take those. So it's no surprise to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire creating a lot of buzz. It was, if you're going to design a back to play in that system, it was him.
No, it's him. And I kind of kick myself for not having a vision. But when you hear Brett Veach and Andy Reid talk about Brian Westbrook,
yeah,
I had the aha moment like, oh, man, you know what? Why couldn't I envision that? Because that's exactly how they can utilize him. Anyone who can remember Brian Westbrook coming out of Villanova, tore it up at the Senior Bowl as a returner, catching the ball out the backfield, was kind of a third down guy, then got his opportunity and was a dominant playmaker for the Eagles for about a 3 or 4 year run. Had a couple Pro Bowl berths, was a fantastic player, being able to really run it and catch it out the backfield. Edwards-Helaire is very similar in terms of his ability to catch the ball out the backfield. May not have A-plus top-end speed, but he's fast enough to create some problems. And with all the weapons on the perimeter, Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, he is going to face light boxes. And you cannot underestimate the impact that he will make in the screen game. Andy Reid is one of the best screen play designers in football, and he will call them on any down. The screen game is a huge part of what Kansas City does to create explosive plays on offense.
All right, let's switch over to the defense. I'm going to give you a name here, Defensive Rookie of the Year candidate, and it's a player with a ton of production coming out of the Big Ten, and it ain't Chase Young. Mm. Antoine Winfield. Write that one down.
Yeah.
Antoine Winfield is going to get his hands on a lot of footballs. Why? Because he always gets his hands on a lot of footballs. Why? Because his dad did nothing but get his hands on a bunch of footballs. Some guys have instincts and ball skills, others don't. This kid is dripping with it. And they ended up getting him, I think, in the 40s, right? In the late 40s to Tampa. Now this offense with Tom Brady, I think, is going to have a chance with Bruce Arians to really run up some points. And once they do, you're going to put teams in chase. Todd Bowles can dial it up with pressure. They've got a pass rush, and he's got all the ball skills in the world. And everything I've been told is he walked in there, as you'd expect, like a seasoned veteran, like an old pro, somebody who grew up in the game. It's not big for him at all, and those instincts have already shown up. So to me, I think he's a legit rookie defensive player of the year candidate.
No, I agree with you, and I agree with you because – he steps into the right situation. A lot of times you and I have talked about the environment really matters. And he steps into an environment from a coaching standpoint. Kevin Ross is there. Kevin Ross, longtime player, longtime pro bowler. He's there. Ty Bowles, the defensive coordinator, another guy who has spent time in that DB room, not only as a top-end player, but as one of the best DB coaches that you'll find. So he's going to get A1 teaching. And then when your dad has played in the league a long time, some of those – genes, some of that legacy impacts you. Antoine Winfield is in a great spot to step right in and make plays right away from day one.
And I'll add a bonus here in that I think the Chargers have a chance to have the best linebacking core in the National Football League. And people are going to scoff at that because people don't know these guys. But with Kenneth Murray coming in, with all of his speed and athleticism, we've seen other rookie linebackers over the last few years step in. Think of Devin Bush, the impact some of these guys have had immediately. You're going to see that with Kenneth Murray with his speed and just physicality. Drew Tranquil, I feel like I've been talking about Drew Tranquil this whole offseason, Buck. He is really good, man. When you look at when he got on the field last year for the Chargers, they were out of it. The team wasn't good. The season got away from him, but he played really well. So you plug him in there with Kenneth Murray. But then if you're in a lot of nickel because you have Chris Harris in there who can kind of come down there and do some of the dirty work if you need, you want to play a run-heavy team and wants to go with two tights, you put Denzel Perriman in there who's a banger, has always been a really good banger. Like, that's got a chance to be a really, really good linebacking group.
No, they do have an opportunity. That defense should be lights out. Joey Bosa, who just got that hefty contract last week. He teams up with Melvin Gordon. You have Derwin James in the middle. You talked about the linebacker core, like their DBs, because now when you have Chris Harris and Casey Hayward, Desmond King has outstanding instincts. They're just a lot of playmakers, and the way that they want to play in this Gus Bradley defense with their eyes on the ball, creating pressure, more turnovers. And if they get more turnovers with the way that they want to play in terms of being able to run the ball, selective shots in the passing game, they're going to be a handful because they are a very, very physical team. Another team, you talked about young players having a chance to have an impact. The buzz building out of Atlanta on A.J. Terrell playing cornerback. Look, he was one of the more polarizing prospects in terms of where he was drafted. Was he worthy of being there? But when you hear the buzz coming out of Atlanta, they've just talked about his ability to upgrade the secondary, the plays that he's already made, getting his hands on the ball. I liked his ability to really do a bunch of different things, potentially as a nickelback, because I felt like he was tough enough to tackle and he could cover. He is a guy that can make an impact on a team that should be much better on defense with Raheem taking over.
Yeah, Raheem, once he took over, we saw the numbers immediately change.
Yeah, Raheem Morris. Yep.
He makes a difference. So, no, I like that one. How about anybody else? Any other rookies you can think of, Buck, that you hear anything about?
No, I mean, I think everyone has talked about, like, Chase Young and what Washington wants to do up front. Today, we're just getting a pass zone. And so, as my dad would say, like, today we separate the goat from the sheep. We'll see who's real and who's not. So we will see which guys, as we begin to get the pass zone and start really having some live contact periods, that's when we'll be able to kind of understand which guys will be able to really make immediate contributions right away.
All right, we've seen some contract extensions done here. We saw with the two tight ends since we last talked, with Kittle and Kelce getting done. I know you and Lance touched on that. Then you also have this big deal here for Kenny Clark, one of those players who I don't think people understand how good he is. When you talk to offensive line coaches around the league, they'll rave about him, and that's the reason he got 4 years, $70 million. Again, those inside guys that can create havoc inside, man, it is a lot. There is a need for those guys, and you do not let them ever walk out of the building.
You know, DJ, he's flown under the radar. People don't really talk about him. But, you know, next to Chris Jones and Aaron Donald, he has been one of the more productive interior pass rushers the last 2 years. 6 sacks in each of the last 2 seasons, 16.5 sacks heading into this year. And, look, we've had more and more people talk, hey, if I'm building a defense, I need 2 pass rushers. It used to be 2 outside guys, but now it's an inside rusher and an outside rusher. The inside rusher is important because you need to get into the quarterback's face right away. You got to get him off his spot when it comes to throwing the quick game. Big, big playmaker for the Green Bay Packers. And the way that Mike Pettine likes to attack using a variety of blitzes, he creates one-on-one opportunities for Clark on the inside. He's been able to cash in those opportunities and make him into sacks.
He's a really, really good football player. And as Nabil, our resident Packer, not even Homer. I don't even think Homer does it justice. The obsessed, like stalker. He's like a stalker of the Packers, everything Packers, mentioning that he's only 24 years old. So a lot of good football left for him. I want to get your thoughts on the Cowboys. We hear a lot of buzz about defense there with Mike Nolan and how they're using guys. Sounds like Lawrence and Alden Smith have been standing up a little bit. I don't think people really remember, too, when Alden Smith was in his right mind and was healthy. I think it was under Mike Nolan, right, in San Francisco, just how good he was, man.
The Jim Tom Zula is a defensive line coach there. And under Jim Tom Zula, the first 2 or 3 seasons, I want to say Alden Smith had 33 – first 2 seasons, he had 33.5 sacks.
Yeah.
Dominant player. The combination between he and Justin Smith was unstoppable. The way they would run those 2-man games on one side, picking, up and unders, all of those TE stunts they did. Well, last time we saw him play in 2015, he didn't have the same pop, didn't have the same juice off the ball. He had become more of a power player. He has gotten right. He's gotten physically. And everybody that you talk to down in Dallas has talked about early in camp, he is really dominated off the edge. And what I see from the Dallas Cowboys defensively is when you go inside Everson Griffin, who I don't know how he was on the market for that long. Yeah. What they now have is a defense that can play multiple with multiple players, meaning Mike Nolan is a 3-4 guy. I don't know if he was with you. Was he with you in Baltimore?
Yep.
So In Baltimore, he wanted to run a 3-4. He ran a 3-4 defense. That's kind of what he's known for. In Dallas, he's committed to run a 4-3. But as we know, you can run a 4-3 with 3-4 principles, depending on what you do with that other edge rusher. Well, before they signed Everson Griffin, the vision was Aldon Smith would be that stand-up guy
to play opposite DeMarcus Lawrence. They have some pass rushers. Well, now when you get Everson Griffin, who
DJ, Everson Griffin is basically the in-and-out menu. He doesn't do a lot. He's an upfield rusher and a spin complement, but he is dominant. He's a hard-working player off the edge. Well, now you can have him play outside, DeMarcus Lawrence play outside. Aldon Smith can kick inside. You can do some five-man fronts with two of those guys standing up, one guy playing inside. They can do a bunch of different things. And when you mix in Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, they can be very problematic with an aggressive rush scheme to come after you. And Mike McCarthy says something I think everyone has to understand. He talked about when you're explosive on offense, you invest heavily in the pass rush. Because if we can jump out on you and get a lead, we take away your ability to run the ball, and now pass rushers can pin their ears back. The Dallas Cowboys would be a much more aggressive offense early in games so they can rush the passer. And then in the second half, that's when you will see Zeke Elliott run the ball, run it out. That's how the Cowboys would play. And that's been the formula for them to win in 14, 16, and 18 when they were able to win the division.
Yeah, they're going to have to win pressure up front because there's still some unknowns in the secondary. I like Chidobe Awuzie. I think he's a really good player. You bring over HaHa Clinton-Dix as a veteran. But you've got the two rookies, Trephon Diggs and Reggie Robinson. They've got to get comfortable and get up to speed because the rest of this team is ready to go. You look at this depth chart, save the secondary. You want to put the front, the linebackers, offensive line, running backs, receivers, quarterback. I mean, it is a loaded group. And I think another name, just speaking on the Cowboys, Blake Jarwin. I don't know how many people really give him his due as kind of one of the better young tight ends. He's a good football player. They like him a lot, and it sounds like McCarthy has liked what he's seen from him. He's going to use a tight end.
Yeah, he's going to use the tight end. I would expect now that the Cowboys are going to be a heavy 11 personnel team. And so Blake Jarwin being able to command the middle of the field. But the other guy that is really getting a lot of attention, CeeDee Lamb. I mean, no surprise. We thought he was one of the better players in the draft. He has made some remarkable catches in camp. And now they're just trying to figure out, from an offensive standpoint, how are you going to feed all the mouths that need the ball? They all need to be fed. They all are hungry. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, both of those guys had 1,000 yards. There's speculation that they could have 3,000-yard receivers. Ezekiel Elliott has had 1,300-plus yards in three or four seasons. I mean, there are a lot of weapons, and Dak Prescott is one of only two quarterbacks in NFL history with 40-plus wins and 15,000 yards in 4 years. The only other guy, Dan Marino. Yeah. And so this offense, this front seven, they're good enough, but the big question to me is what you talked about. Can their cornerbacks hold up? They have to be able to pick off some passes because the lack of takeaways has been an Achilles heel for this Dallas Cowboys defense.
Yeah, we'll see how that all comes together, but it does sound promising. I think that defense should be pretty darn good. I want to get to college player we talked about at the top. We're going to get to him in just a second, and Micah Parsons. But before we do that, I wanted to bring up one thing and kind of go back to a conversation we previously had, talking about the expansion of the practice squad going to 16. And we've talked about, we've shared the ideas back and forth of, okay, treating it like a minor league system where you have some AAA guys, some AA guys, and some rookie-level players. That was kind of our you know, us kind of spitballing back and forth. So I talked to a general manager, presented him with that idea, and it was interesting because he said, you know what we've done is we've already decided which positions we're going to use for the 16 spots. So we know we're going to have, you know, whatever, three offensive linemen, four offensive linemen, whatever that number is, two corners, whatever. But they're kind of making the shell of we need to have these pieces in place. And he said, you know, in a normal year, yeah, I would love to have some of those developmental guys. But he said with COVID, not knowing what's going to happen week to week, he said this really is our, you know, it's basically a AAA team. It's the best guys they have that are going to be available to step in and play in a game because they could get, you could find out you lose three offensive linemen on a Friday and have to turn around and play on a Sunday. So you've got to have some guys ready to step onto the field and be able to help you win football games. So I think we were well-intended thinking about long-term, but I think under the stress of this pandemic, they have to treat it a little bit differently. So my idea then is, let's, as a National Football League, because we're going to lose some form of college football, we've seen it with a bunch of conferences, you know, the two big ones in the Power Five with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten not playing a fall season. We'll see what happens in the spring, but all these 1AAs that are not playing, the development is going to be, there's a gap is what I'm getting to. So I know they've talked about just kind of 1 year only with the 16 guys on the practice squad. I hope they make that permanent. And this year it can be the AAA team. And then maybe next year, as we've got a handle on the virus and hopefully we have a vaccine, that can truly be a place where we can see some development for some of these young players, as well as another league like the XFL, as we've talked about. But there's a gap there that needs to be filled, and I hope the NFL will do it.
Yeah, like I think it's interesting what your conversation brought out. Even with that, when you talked about the positions, I do wonder if we go through it and we think about the 16 positions, like you talked about three or four offensive linemen, a handful of corners. I would think there would be a couple of linebackers there, maybe one inside, one outside, running back, couple wide receivers, quarterback that we've already talked about, probably a veteran quarterback that is able to kind of come off the bench and be able to play, and then a handful of assorted guys that can come in and just maybe do some multi-positional cross-train stuff. That would be interesting. But I still believe, like, even though we talk about the lack of developmental players on the squad, it does have to be like minor leagues. Coming off a night in which I watched Moneyball all over again.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you gotta, you have to get it. You have to have some guys that can play, and you have to be able to really trust those guys, and you have to get those guys reps. Some years we've seen where the practice squad guys don't get many reps in the real team practice part of it. I think you have to get those guys enough reps, because on a Saturday they may be pressed into duty on Sunday without having a lot of time because of COVID or an outbreak or anything crazy. And so this year, more than any other year, if you're the management, you have to be on your coaches to make sure that the young guys, the developmental squad, that they're getting work before practice, after practice, and during practice with the regular defense and the regular offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge. You got to keep a lot of guys ready to go. Got to be ready to play to be able to get out there in a minute's notice. One thing here on the college front, we talked about it. Micah Parsons, our buddy Bruce Feldman just wrote another article about him. So we encourage you to go check that out. It's on The Athletic. But Bruce talking to some opposing defensive coordinators and position coaches about him. And he is a special player, man. He is a special, special player. And as we get there, I'm excited kind of getting my first look at all these players to then get a chance as we kind of get that base layer to really go back in and really do some more work on these guys. Just watching three games on Micah Parsons, his talent jumps off the tape.
Very talented player. Very talented player. And I think with Micah, and this is what a lot of scouts are going to have to do, you have to go back to high school. Because when Micah Parsons was in high school, I think he's from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Micah Parsons played with his hand down in the dirt. He had never stood up. He was never a guy. Now, he was kind of like the freak athlete that could do whatever he wanted to do in high school. But the bulk of his time in high school was as a pass rusher with his hand in the dirt. Only at Penn State has he been able to kind of move around and kind of play some off-the-ball linebacker and some other stuff. And so when you look at him, you have to understand where he is very, very early in the developmental process in terms of what he could be. Very talented, fast, physical, athletic. When people get around him and scouts begin to dig in, they have to make sure from a personality standpoint that he's ready to be a leader. Tremendous talent. Having been around him a little bit, some immaturity a little bit, but that's what you expect when you're 19, 20, and those things.
Five-star attitude a little
five
bit.
Five-star. Yep. Yeah, so you have to make sure that your coaches are able to take him where he is and continue to elevate him, because I believe he's always been able to get away with his talent because he is so superiorly talented to some other guys. But can you coach him hard enough to get him to take his game from good to great, or from great to Pro Bowl, all pro caliber very early, especially when he's only had two seasons on the field?
Yeah, it's One thing jumps out, though, man. He can run. And we've talked about it at the linebacker position. You got to have guys that can really scoot now to be able to cover these tight ends, to be able to cover backs, and to be able to range sideline to sideline blitz. He can do all those things. So just some refinement that will take place there. But there's a lot to work with. I want to get to what happened with the Washington football team here. I got used to saying that. That's weird. WFT, the Washington football team.
Here. It's like soccer. It's like the Premier League.
I know. Can we? I was almost hoping that we would have that like kind of that gap period. Remember when it was the artist formerly known as Prince?
Yeah.
Like I almost. I need that. Yeah, just for just like transition. A little bit. I can transition to getting used to not saying it. But you know, neither here nor there. But a guy that I was around, Jason Wright, was running back out of Northwestern. When I was with the Cleveland Browns, he was on the team there. And I didn't know him extremely well, but what a great dude, man, and had an unbelievable reputation coming out. Jim Nagy, if you want to see about his background, go follow our buddy Jim Nagy at the Senior Bowl and look at his notes on him when he was coming out of Northwestern, I believe, in 2004. But somebody that is only 38 years old right now. And he becomes the NFL's first African-American team president. So that's a very big deal. Also is the youngest team president in the National Football League right now. And if you've heard him speak, when you get a chance to watch some of the videos on him, I mean, you want to talk about somebody with a presence and somebody that is a heck of a lot smarter than you or I. I mean, he is sharp. And for all that Dan Snyder's got criticized for and wrong decisions or missteps here or there, I think they knocked this one out of the park.
Yeah, no, this is a really momentous occasion for him. And people will talk about the diversity thing, but I'll talk about it from a former player standpoint. John Elway is a guy who has made the transition to be an executive VP and kind of runs the Denver Broncos. But for Jason Wright to ascend from being a player, a running back in the league that played at a few different spots, to then make his way in the business world, then to come back over to Washington and be the president. And even though he's overseeing the business side of it, I think what it does is, DJ, we've been in those meetings where we're talking about people's background and we're talking about guys coming into the league and their intellect and what they can do and what they offer in the locker room. Well, I think what Jason does is he offers a blueprint for players who want to be more than just athletes, who want to be more than just coaches, to think about a different path. And so hats off to him for being able to kind of carve out a niche in the world. And we'll see what he's able to do. But it's a tremendous opportunity for him to blaze a new path, not only from a diversity standpoint, but also for former players who aspire to dream big dreams when it comes to when their playing days are done.
Yeah, it's a great story. Another great story coming out of Washington is Alex Smith getting back on the field after just a gruesome injury. It's a miracle that he still has his leg, that he's still walking, and now to be out there, you know, practicing in some capacity is really cool to see. That was I thought that was really a highlight. It's been a long time since we've said, you know, coming out of Washington, we've had two of the better moments of the week.
Yeah, no, a long time coming. And Alex Smith, the Alex Smith thing is interesting. I don't know how closely you scrutinized some of the videos that have come out or whatever with him moving around and doing those things or whatever. Like, I certainly wish him well, and I hope that he's able to make the full recovery to really play and play at the level that he played at. Because if he is healthy, I think healthy enough to play and play at the level that he departed the field, he gives Ron Rivera an interesting option. And as we've talked about the practice squad and we've talked about the guy coming off the bench in a COVID situation, Alex Smith is the perfect player to be the veteran to sit back while he's continued to fully recover, to be in a position to be able to go play midseason or later if they really need him. I'm really intrigued by what he can bring. And look, they were going to have to pay him anyway. $16.5 million is the cap hit. But if he's able to offer anything as a player, man, it's another feather in the cap of the Washington football team.
I just don't know, man. I put myself in Ron Rivera's situation there. And he's not anywhere close to being able to play in a contact environment just from the little video that I've seen.
No, not close.
Not close. But I would have a hard time if I'm putting myself in Ron Rivera's shoes to say, man, if I put him out on the field, can you imagine? Like, I'd be so nervous. You know, it's so admirable and so I respect him immensely for being able to get to where he's gotten right now. I don't know that I'd have the courage as a coach to put him back in harm's way after seeing what happened to his leg. If you've seen those pictures, man, it's, you'll never unsee them. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could have that on my conscience that I'm putting you in harm's way anymore after seeing what you've been through.
But then what do we do with him? We have to hold him on the squad. Like, he's paid. His money is guaranteed for this year.
Yeah.
Like,
he can help Haskins.
He can certainly help Haskins. He can be there. Like, we've seen the guys that he was able to mentor. Colin Kaepernick played well with Alex Smith in his ear. Patrick Mahomes obviously soaked up all the knowledge and became an MVP as a first-year starter after Alex Smith really opened up his arms and shared a lot of information. And so he is definitely a welcome mentor. And maybe from a ceremonious standpoint, they let him take a knee at the end of a victory. They give him an opportunity to kind of bring it full circle. But I will say this, one of the more resilient people that I've ever seen in the National Football League to make it back from where he was injured on the field November 18 to come all the way back when many of us didn't give him a chance of being back. Hats off to him. Hats off to his family for enduring and overcoming the challenges that were presented with the injury.
Yeah, it's quite an accomplishment there. I don't know if – I guess we can talk about this. I gave you a buzz when I was driving. Drove my daughter to college, and I was driving. I want to say it was Silver City, New Mexico, is when I gave Buck a call just to see if he remembered cruising through there at Western New Mexico University, I believe is the name of it, for a linebacker back in the day. We had to go through there and scout. Not a big fan of the area. I'm going to be honest with you. I there's lots of areas of the country that I enjoy. That was not one of them.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it was interesting that you were doing the drive, and it brought back some memories. I can't say all of them were good,
nightmares. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a ride, DJ. Like, how long did it take you to get your daughter to
her destination? So it was 19-hour drive, 19 and a half total. I went into it with the goal of 10 hours day one, like 9 and change day two. Really kind of split it 50-50. I got my road dog juices flowing a little bit when I got out there. I told you I'm not going to drive at night. So I got up. We got out the door at 6. Buck, I was going to stop in Las Cruces. I got to Las Cruces. I looked at my son. I had my son drive with me. So he's 13. So he's sitting there just watching movies, hanging out. I ended up flying my daughter and my wife out so we could meet him there. And we're driving, and we hit Las Cruces, and I'm like, dude, I'm feel great. Let's keep going. I said, we get to El Paso. Let's go to El Paso. So we get to El Paso, and I'm like, let's just get to the next town. So I couldn't remember. Like, there's going to be something here in an hour or two. We'll be fine. So I have him, like, doing all the work on the phone to find the map, and I'm like, all right, look at the Marriott properties. Like, what do we got coming up? And he's like, really kind of the next – decent sized town is Odessa. I go, all right, how far is that? He's like, 4 hours. I'm like, oh man. So I ended up doing 15 and change on day one.
Really?
Yes. We didn't get in the hotel till like midnight. We did a full 15, and then I got up the next day and I thought, okay, I've done all the hard work. The 4 hour drive on day two was harder than the 15 hour because I was wearing that 15 hour back and neck that I had to do for the 4 hour day on day two. You remember those days, man?
Oh man. Coming from LA, the longest drive that I would make would be the first one. And I would go straight from LA to Utah. I would go from LA to Salt Lake City. Somewhere in there. Cause it's like 3.5-4 to Vegas. And then you have another like 6 or so. So I would try and get out, do the Utah schools and kind of do that loop or whatever. But then the secondary loop that I would do is leave the house, LA, and then make my way that you were going, like through Arizona to New Mexico, up to Albuquerque, and then come back around. But DJ, man, hats off to you. Like, I'm definitely not in driving shape. And I don't know what it was like for you when you got on the plane and when you got back home.
The plane ride was easy. I'll tell you what, I never appreciated a plane ride like that one in a while. But I remember, going to college, we drove straight through 33 hours to get from San Diego to North Carolina, my brother and I. So we would take turns, and we drove straight through. And then I drove, when I was in Louisiana, it was 23 hours, and I did that one straight a couple times. But as you get older, like those days were over. 15 was a good long one for me. And my back was so stiff. There's nothing good about it. absolutely nothing good about it. But no, we got there. Tough. We got her all settled in. She's good. So, man, it's weird. It's weird to have a college age child. I can tell you that. That'll age you real quick.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine.
It's coming, Buck. It's coming.
Yeah, it is coming. My little guy's kind of visited around schools. He's a rising senior. This weekend, he played in a baseball showcase event in San Bernardino. Man, you talk about hot.
Hot. Yes, sir.
You don't know hot until you're in San Bernardino, and it is 100 at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And he's out there playing. Bless his
that's
heart.
Where, that's like, where Jim Mora had UCLA working out.
Why?
Like, yeah. Brutal.
Smoking. But, yeah, no, DJ, I'm like the sands of the hourglass are quickly dwindling through. And you talk about that drive. I'm like, hey, dude, let's try and keep this within a 4 mile radius so I don't have to do these long drives.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. That's the nice thing about my daughter going to school in Dallas is I'm like, at least that's easy flight wise, you know,
boom,
easy
boom.
In, easy out, direct, no issues. All right. Inspired by ongoing conversations with players, the NFL launched NFL Votes to empower and improve our communities through exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your voice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more. Buck, we had some sad news this last week with Howard Mudd, legendary coach, who's I believe is an unbelievable player as well. We talked to him about that during his visit with us when we did our offensive line episode of our position prototype series. Howard Mudd, if you watched the Colts play during Peyton Manning's tenure there, you saw him on the sideline as the offensive line coach, and just as good as it gets. Unfortunately, was in a motorcycle accident and was in the hospital for a while. Unfortunately, did not make it. He passed away on August 12th. But I want to just run back a little snippet of our conversation we had with him, just so if you aren't familiar with Howard Mudd, I just give you a little idea of just how smart this guy was talking about the game of football.
If people were listening and wondering, in terms of breaking it up percentage-wise, the amount of time you would spend on the run game versus the amount of time you would spend on the passing game, what would that look like in today's game?
I think you spend the most amount of time on the most difficult thing. The most difficult is pass protection. And even if it's an inordinate amount compared to if it's disproportionate or whatever that phraseology is, to if you spend, let's say you've got individual time, practice time, that sort of thing, if you throw the ball 60% of the time, I'd spend 80% of my time doing something in pass protection. When I can pass protect, I feel so good about where I'm at because all of the body movements that are required to react to the man and redirect myself, get myself in the right position, don't get faked out, know what to do with each little movement he makes. If he bull rushes me, I know how to do that. I'm a maverick. I spin and hop and mm-hmm. do all kinds of stuff. I do everything that I can to keep myself in front of that guy. Most of all of them are athletic things because the football, football as an offensive lineman isn't played with strength and power. It's played with leverage, quickness. That's what it's played with. If you are strong and you're quick and agile and have balance, and you got a Hall of Famer.
Well, Buck, again, I would encourage everybody, if you have the time, to go back and find that prototype series and go listen to the offensive line episode, and you'll hear the entirety of that Howard Mudd interview. You'll learn quite a lot about him. Interesting man. I tried to describe him this way. Somebody sent me a text about it, and I said he was the kindest curmudgeon that I ever knew. You know, I worked with him with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he had this reputation as kind of a curmudgeon-y, grumpy guy. But I went down to his office and had several conversations with him about offensive line play, and that was kind of a little example of it. Just somebody that'll go down in history, I think belongs in the Hall of Fame as an assistant coach.
Look, he did a great job. Did a great job of taking a cast of characters, a bunch of guys that were underrated, undervalued in the process, and turned them into very, very solid players. I think of the work he did with a former teammate of mine, Jeff Saturday. Jeff Saturday was an undrafted free agent, went to Baltimore, was cut, was home, goes to Indianapolis and becomes a multiple-time Pro Bowl player under Howard Mudd's tutelage. And so Howard Mudd leaves a legacy. You've talked about some of the things that you learned just from observing him practice, the way he would teach the short set for some offensive linemen and the way that they would finish. And so, look, he leaves a legacy that we will continue to celebrate. And you're right. You talk about a guy who is worthy of a gold jacket. Howard Mudd is certainly worthy of consideration as a gold jacket candidate.
No doubt. So, again, I encourage you to go check that one out. You can go find, I think, at NFL.com/MTS prototype. I think they still have all those episodes at that website, so you can go find it there. Again, encourage you, as we have been doing lately, to check out the new Hard Knocks podcast hosted by our buddy Peter Schrager. Episode 2 of that show, Hard Knocks, airs Tuesday, August 18th at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO. We've been encouraging you guys to leave us ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. You guys have done a great job of that. We appreciate it. We've also challenged you to go on there and let us know who the best high school football player you've ever seen, because we've done a bunch of interviews and had a bunch of conversations and unearthed a lot of cool names through this process. And now that we've put it out to you guys have given us some names, some of them that we hadn't heard, in terms of the best high school football player you've ever seen. Nabil, what are some of the names that have come rolling in?
MJD, Kevin Falk, Micah Hyde, Kyler Murray, Lamar Houston, Tavon Austin,
nice.
Vince Young, Ronald Curry, Bryn Renner, Dylan Mitchell. A lot of names are coming in.
That is a lot of names there. Who stands out to you there, Buck? Because I'm sitting there looking at that list thinking Tavon Austin. Tavon Austin's college highlights were unbelievable. I can't imagine watching him in high school.
High school, I want to say in high school, he was Gatorade Player of the Year at Maryland. He may have run for maybe 2,600 yards. Ooh. As a tailback. Like, unbelievable. I think Lamar Houston, people haven't seen. Lamar Houston, who was a defensive end passer.
Was 33, right? It was 33 or 44.
It was 33. You know why? Because he was a running back in high school. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how many pass rushes you've seen that can tote the rock, but he
Terrell Suggs was
guys.
An unbelievable running back in high school.
You know, like, big-time guys. I think the one, who else, like, that was just mentioned on that list. Did I hear MJD?
Yes, Reese Jones got some love on there.
Yeah, got some love. Ronald Curry was also an outstanding high school player. Like, this is the thing. This really opens up so many guys to be talked about, you know.
I love it. What it does is it gives us, we have the resources with our relationship with Huddle to be able to unearth some of these. So that's what I'm saying. We'll work on that. That's a project. Mark doesn't know we're signing him up for this, but whoever we got to get on that, Nabil, Arjuna, whatever. But it gives us a chance to kind of our favorite high school highlights of some of these players. So that keep those names coming. If you haven't already, drop a review on there on Apple Podcasts and let us know, you know, what you think. Who's the best high school football player you've ever seen? Mark's saying that's a job for my intern. No, Mark, he's busy. I've got him. He's got assignments. He's busy. This is NFL. This is official NFL media business here that we're talking about. All right, Buck, is there anything else you want to add before we jump out of here?
Nah, man, great podcast, great weekend. I'm glad to have football back. The guys have padded it up. Can't wait to get some clips and some insight on what some of these scrimmages and live tackling drills look like.
Some of these Thursday All-Americans, Buck, they've had their day in the sun. The pads come on. Now we find out who can really play.
Yeah, now we get to see who can really play. Yes.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank Nabil for all his work putting this thing together. Appreciate you guys checking us out. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.